Good, John. Welcome to Boomer and X.
Yes, our initial podcast. We're not quite sure what we're doing, but we're going to do it.
We're just doing it.
That's right.
And I thought, we both thought a good way to introduce it would be introducing ourselves, just tell you a little bit about ourselves before we jump into anything.
I think that's a good idea, although I would like to have a few kind of goals in what we're trying to do. One of the things I would like to do is try to remain authentic as possible.
Yep.
I know there's a real lack of that going around, and I'm not saying that everything I'm going to say is going to be gospel, but I would like to be somewhat authentic. And I'd also, as much as we're going to discuss things down the road, try to show, at least as a part of decorum, some good manners to, you know, because I think those are totally lacking.
Yeah.
So, Brian, who are you?
Oh, I thought you were going to go first.
Okay, I'll go first. I guess it's the old age before beauty thing.
Yeah, I have to hear you tell me who you are, and that'll remind me.
Yeah, I'm the boomer man. My parents are Denver natives. We're born in Denver. When I was 4 or 5 years old, they moved to Florida, which is where we're at now. They moved down to They moved to Melbourne, originally the old O'Galley. And my dad was part of the Fortune 500 company space program and their specific mission was the Gemini mission. And he worked for Martin Marietta at the time. So he was traveling to the Cape, and we had six kids in our family. So my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was traveling to the Cape, and we were living the picket fence life. And then he got some promotions at school, he got some promotions at work, and we ended up moving over to Melbourne Beach, which I know is where you're from. And we moved over to Melbourne Beach over there off Riverside Drive, and I started to live the life of as our PE teacher in parochial school called us, the river rats.
Mm-hmm.
We were the beach rats. She didn't like it. She didn't like the people that she perceived everybody that was on the other side of the river as having money.
On the beach side?
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
On the other side of the Indian
that's
River.
Kind of coming true nowadays, yeah. But that was not the case.
It was not the case.
Yeah, necessarily.
But she saw us, and one of the reasons she saw that is because I can remember where we lived on Riverside Drive. We were living the good life because everybody around us was either a doctor or something to do high up in the space program.
Hmm.
Yeah, I can remember 5 or 6 doctors immediately around us. And I also remember all the people in the space program. So there was some fluence. Back then, if you were a doctor, you were wealthy.
Right.
You know,
right,
I mean, it's not necessarily the case anymore
nowadays,
with medicine.
But
you were wealthy. So, and I mentioned parochial school. I went to parochial school for my first until sixth grade. And my parents decided that with our help, you got to remember there were 6 of us by then.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than paying 6 kids tuition, because 6 of us within 8 years, and rather than paying that, we talked them into letting us go to public school. And I can remember, and this is where even is where our paths converge. I went to Hoover Junior High School in 7th grade, which is, I understand, where you went to school 15 years later.
I was a Hoover Groover.
That's indeed. Right, a Hoover indeed. Groover. Or a Hawk, as they were.
A Hawk, yes.
They were the Hawks.
Yes.
and so I went to Hoover for that year. Then things started, and I only realized this later, and I'm going to talk about it because it's part of my story. But we started moving around. We moved to Maryland. Then we moved back to Colorado, where my parents were from, to the city. Then we moved up to the mountains into a little town called Buffalo Creek. And I didn't know it at the time, but these were all geographical transfers because my father was very successful at an early age. But from Florida on, from Florida to Maryland was a demotion. I thought these were promotions.
Promotions, yeah.
Okay, Florida to Maryland was a demotion. Maryland back to Denver was a demotion. And then he got even another demotion, and we moved up to the mountains because we had to find a house up there because it was cheaper, and they were going to save the marriage. There was and the only reason I mention that is because as we go along in this podcast, it's going to become very apparent that I am a member of a 12-step program, mm-hmm. and have been for the last 37 years. I in no way am representing that program, nor trying to, but it is part of who I am. So if you hear things from them, it's just because it's part of it's part of my DNA now, and that's kind of what happened. So anyways, we went to the mountains. I went to college after that. I moved out when I was 16, 17. Went to college. I only went to college for one reason. That was to party.
Right.
And the girl I was hanging out with was really smart. So she was going to go and actually get an education. I could have cared less.
Right.
And what's really sad about that is I was paying for it. I was having to work and do all these things, but my whole goal was to initially was to play football, but once I hurt my knee, was to just play intramural sports, get high, and rock and roll.
Right.
And that was my whole purpose. So things happened. That girl and I split up, and I moved back to Florida. And when I moved back to Florida, I did many number of things, but it's from an education standpoint, we'll get into this, but from an education standpoint, I did graduate. I just graduated from college when I was 50. So,
okay.
Only because I had promised my daughter, if she was the youngest, if she got her degree, I'd go back and get mine. I never thought I'd end up using it, but I did because I ended up becoming a teacher. But that's a story for a teacher and a middle school administrator. But we'll get to all that later. But that's kind of who I am.
So you were saying about your dad's moving and the demotions. I'm guessing the point of which was it was his alcoholism that.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, he drank. Yes.
Okay.
In a very hard way. Look, as you know, being Irish, okay, I did not know people didn't drink.
Right.
I thought there was something wrong with families that or adults who didn't drink. I thought there was something wrong with them.
Right.
And because every event, every first communion, every baptism, every funeral, every wake, every wedding, everything, it was just nothing but a freaking drunken brawl.
Right.
You know, so it was part of who we were.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah, I know. There's the old adage that, you know, that God invented alcohol to keep the Irish from taking over the world.
It did work.
You know, so yes, that was very much a part. The alcoholism was very much a part of my family and my background and me personally.
Right, right. So, my background, I was born in Boston. My family were all from there, both on my mom and dad's side. I was the youngest of three. Parents divorced when I was about 3 years old, and both got remarried by the time I was about 8 or 9. I came from, my dad was an athlete, a very successful athlete. He got a gold medal in the first time the U.S. hockey team got the gold. He and his brother were on that team. So they kind of became local legends, at least, where, you know, in Boston, hockey was like Christianity, basically.
It is. I know a lot about sports, and you're right. Boston is huge hockey town.
It's a huge sports town.
Right.
But hockey.
But the Bruins are ingrained there. Orr.
And college hockey is a big deal and all that. Yeah. So, anyway, so I basically grew up, you know, spending the week with mom, spending weekends with dad, summers with dad. Christmases were broken up, you know, half and half. And then when I was about 9, my stepdad, who was great, he was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and now he was an engineer, and got a job at Harris. So we moved to Florida. There was a big tug of war sort of over you know, where the kids were going to stay and who we were going to live with. And Mom won. And so from then on, we spent school years in Florida and then Christmas vacation, spring vacation, and summer with Dad up in Boston. Summers on Cape Cod. Back when Cape Cod was kind of like old Florida, like
right.
anyone could live in Cape Cod. Now it's a lot, you know.
By the way, as a frame of reference, Harris, who your stepdad came to work for, was a semiconductor business.
Right.
And it was all an offshoot of the space program.
Right.
Everything is all based on that. That's right. How this part of Florida, the part of Florida that we're talking about, that's how this part became more than what it is, other than a sleepy beach town, is because of the space program.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it's funny, too, because, you know, I remember asking my stepdad a lot. We'd sit up nights watching movies on HBO and James Bond and all that stuff. And I'd ask him about, or sometimes war movies, and I'd ask him about his experience. He would never talk about it. And even when I asked him about his job, it was a little vague as to what he does at his job. It turns out he was actually in Iran, on the Iran-Iraq border, sent there to watch the border or whatever in 1978, I believe. When was the Shah overthrown?
I think Carter was president.
77, 78.
I want to say it was early 80s, late 70s.
Yeah.
That's
when he was thrown out of Iran.
Yeah.
So I was talking to someone recently who was in the CIA and overt operations versus covert operations.
Right.
He said if he was there that time and got, there's no way he was not CIA.
Gotcha.
So my mom and I and brothers and sisters, we think he might have been, you know, involved. Hopefully, I won't have to edit this part out.
No, I think you're going to be fine.
Might get censored.
I think you're good. Unless you start spilling secrets, state secrets,
right.
I think we're okay. Yeah,
and we don't even know that for a fact. But it was kind of like a little fun thing to think about, and it kind of makes more and more sense as time goes on and we think about it. But in any case, we moved to Florida January 1978, and I went to Gemini Elementary, named after the Gemini mission. And then I was a Hoover Groover for 3 years and went to high school at Mel High. I actually went to Boston for a year. My junior in high school, I lived with my dad for a year. We didn't get along so well for that year and didn't go so hot. And I had a lot going on. A lot of fun stuff going on in Florida, so I came back here, and I actually dropped out of high school I dropped out in 86, finally in 1990 moved to Boston and decided to go to college while I still had the opportunity, and I started at Emerson College and then transferred to BU, got a degree in English in 95, and basically, I've been working in advertising on the creative side since 97. Tried a few different things before that, but that's what I do for a living. And I also play music on the side.
Which I know is your passion. I've known you, just for reference, I've known Brian for 30 years. So actually, more than 30 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy when I think about it. but we have many mutual friends, still do, as a matter of fact. Music has always been, and one of my first memories of when I first met you was over at the house in Merritt Island. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is you playing on the piano that was never played.
Right.
Remember?
Oh, I used to love that piano.
Yeah. That was the first thing you would walk to.
Yeah.
When you would come over, and all of us would be over there, and I remember you walking over and just start playing. That's one of my first memories of you. So I know music's a very big part of your life.
So, yeah, we had a friend, Don, that had this amazing grand piano in his house. And we just had this crappy upper. It was the first piano I ever played. It was my grandma's. She gave it to us when I was 5, and because I was the only one playing it. So it was a treat to sit down at a grand piano and actually get some, like, sound and feeling out of the thing. Yeah. But
speaking of Don, I think it would be remiss if we didn't at least acknowledge how important that man was in each of our lives and many, many others. And without going into details, he was a huge, huge influence in my life.
Yeah,
maybe more than any single person, as both a mentor and an advisor. And I just thought I'd throw that out there.
He was just full of wisdom, and he didn't have to flash it. He didn't. It's not like he sat there like a guru, you know, preaching to us or anything like that. He was just an older guy with more experience than us, and I think I could safely say we were fairly lost at the time.
I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
We certainly needed some direction, and Don not only gave that to us, but he gave it to so many others, and he was one of the few people in my life. It seems like people that I admire either did something I admired, or they either said something that I admired. Don was one of the few people that not only talked the talk, but he walked the walk.
Right.
And so in his model of as a human being and as a compassionate person is, it made me a better father.
Yeah.
It made me a better, eventually a better spouse.
Right.
You know, he contributed immensely to my life, and you know, I don't want to keep going because I might even start tearing up thinking about him. You know, I did want to mention him because I know that's something that I think every child, whether I've always said this. I've raised now three of my own kids, and I've always said this that I think a little girl needs her father when she's young, and a little boy needs her father when they're older.
That's interesting.
You know, because you know, my daughter, I was her hero, and I walk on water. And you know, right. I not so much anymore, but it, right. you know, but I did. Now I'm just dad.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, right.
But I did get to experience that kind of worship, you know, when I was younger.
Sure.
But the relationship my son John and I have. It's just crazy, and again, that goes back to Don. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, he was. Let's just say it. He was a father figure
yes.
at a time when you know we probably needed that specific type of father figure in our lives. And Don passed away a few months ago, and that's the first time I've seen John in many years.
What do you think he'd think of us doing what we're doing right now?
All right, Tiger.
Okay, Tiger. If that's what you want to do, yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. God only knows what.
I think he'd be laughing his ass off.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
He might be.
Not with it.
No. Yeah.
Anyway, So my life story could go on forever. I'm going to try and keep it short. But basically, I stayed in Boston, worked in advertising, started after not playing music for 5 years at all or more, started doing that again and playing with people and co-formed a band, recorded an album with them. They moved out to L.A. And for the next 5 years, it was, you know, I thought it was over when they moved to L.A., but they kept coming to Boston for these little mini tours, and I'd go with them, and it was a blast. Then we the album got picked up by a label in Spain, and we toured Spain, and we had so much fun. And so anyway, long story short, after 5 years, I said, look, I was just getting tired of the 5 month long winters in Boston and the cold. I never really adjusted to that after growing up in Florida, and every time I went out there I had a blast. So finally I just bit the bullet and moved to LA. And that's where I was living for the next 18 years, with a few year and a half, 2 year diversions into other cities. But basically, I was in LA for that time and playing more music and still, you know, working in advertising. And then about a year and a half ago, I decided to move back down here to Florida and help take care of my mom. And still doing some music here and there. I haven't still figuring out what I'm going to do next with that, but still working in the same biz. And that's where I'm at now. Yeah.
Full disclosure, I mean, How old are you, Brian?
57. Okay. Yeah.
And I will be 71 in another couple of weeks. So this is crazy when I think about that,
right.
Age-wise, that old commodity of time, boy, that thing, that hourglass is not just sifting, it's broken.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, 10 years goes by in a minute now.
It's crazy. It's so compressed. I do think that it was important that we go through some of that just so people know who we are. But
yeah.
As we go along, I'm sure more will be revealed, as it always is. One of the things I did want to talk about is what we're going to try to talk about on what is going to be the subjects of our podcast. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple things I know pretty well. I know sports very well, but that's boring. Been there, done that. I'm nowhere near versed enough to even think that I can talk about that. But something that I'm also very passionate about is education. And I wasn't before I got into the field of education. And I'm going to try to be as nice as I can, but I don't, it's one of those things, everybody say, oh, it's so effed up and so this and so that. Well, you know what? It is. And there are going to be many, many discussions we have on why I think that is or why it isn't, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think that there is a crisis in this country, and I think it's going to come to a head, not this year, not next year, but I think in the next 10 to 15 years, because right now we're kind of living off of our laurels.
Right.
You know, but there's going to eventually be a come to Jesus time where we're going to have to, you know, be more than just status quo,
right,
to keep being what I consider the greatest country in the world, at least economically. So
I could not agree more. Yeah. And we are resting on our laurels and education specifically. And I don't know where the laurels are anymore.
No, I know.
We were talking about this a little bit before. You were saying, in terms of what we pay for our education and what we get back.
Yeah, we, and again, I'm going to get specifics, and we're going to talk about this down the road specifically, but I feel fairly comfortable in saying that we spend more per student than any country, any modernized country in the world, and we get less return for it than anybody as far as, and no matter what statistics you see, and I really, really tried to narrow this down, and it's funny, the internet can drive you crazy trying to find information.
Yeah.
Because you find so much. If you want to find something to fit your narrative, you can find it. It's there, man.
Right.
Truth really has nothing to do with anything anymore. But that being said, if you look at the educational rankings in the world right now, you'll see generally, okay, depending on which ranking outfit it is, you'll generally see that the top five or six are South Korea and some Scandinavian countries. And the United States, and I think even Slovenia, the outlier there, Slovenia, sorry. And you see the United States, for all that money that we spend, I've seen anywhere from 14 to 31st, yet we spend the most. So that to me is not a good return.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, we were going to get into education on another podcast, though, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And you know, not on just another podcast, because it's kind of like music. We're going to talk about music, and we're going to talk about education.
Right.
And I think what we'd like to do is maybe one week do music, one week do education, if for nothing else, just to break the monotony for us.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But there's so much time
and
effort that's going to have to go into this, because there's so many facets of education and why things are the way they are, and is there anything that can be done about it? What can be done about it, those kind of things. But I think it's important that even if it's just you and me talking, that and only one other person hears this, I did not understand how tough a business. I didn't really have respect for teachers till I was one.
Right.
Okay.
How hard
it truly is.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, and I'm talking about dedicated teachers. There's a lot of teachers that aren't, but there's many that are.
Right.
Those teachers that are dedicated and show up and suit up every day and come into those classrooms, think about this. There's no downtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you have scheduled downtime, but if you just want to take a break, no can do.
Right.
You know, I mean, unless it's your scheduled break time or it's your schedule. So there is almost like an element of potential PTSD in it, in that you're constantly being fired on, you know, your senses are being fired on.
Yeah.
And for those people that manage it and effectively educate people, despite all the impediments and circumstances that exist right now, I have my utmost admiration and respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because not only do they do it, but they do it for such little money.
Right.
I have never worked harder in my life for as little money.
Little money. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, I will tell you, because I feel like I at least tried to fight the good fight when I was doing it. The benefits I got from it were not, they were all altruistic. They weren't, none of them were financial, certainly, you know, and there were many, you know, the many rewards.
Were teachers always underpaid? Like, when did that, like, I'm guessing back in the 40s and 50s, when it was, from what I can see on television and all the old sitcoms and everything, it was a woman's job. It was considered a woman's job, right?
Right, and it also...
Is that why the pay, you think, was...
Definitely.
So low?
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. You hit the nail on the head. It was something, it was a job that a woman could have.
Right.
Okay, and it was also a job that an educated, a person of a minority that was educated could find a job where they may not find any other opportunities anywhere else.
Okay.
That's why you see a lot of minorities in education, is because it wasn't because of necessarily a choice. It was an opportunity.
It was an option.
That's correct. It was opportunity. So, and that leads into the whole other argument of, and again, I'm going to try to be as apolitical as I can,
mm-hmm.
But when you talk about making America great again,
mm-hmm.
We can have that discussion, but we've already talked about this, you and me, outside of what we're doing right now. Who was America really great for?
Right.
Was it great for the black woman? Was it great for the black man? Was it great for the women in general? Was it great for the migrant worker? Was it great for the Hispanic? Was it great for the Latino? If it was great for anybody,
right,
it was great for the people like you and me, the Caucasian white male.
Yeah, that was about it.
And I'm not sure it was all that great then for them either.
Right, right.
I don't know.
I mean, yeah. And going back to the Native Americans, going back, I don't know, there was obviously, you know, white men thought they were superior. The Native Americans were, you know, considered savages, and you know, there was a lot of negativity in our perceptions. And then, you know, of course, the wars that took place afterwards. Going from then to now, when was America at its greatest? And I know we've talked about this a little bit. When I've asked people who, you know, say make America great again a lot, when was America great? And this also goes for interviews I've seen on a lot of all the interviews on TV. They go back to the 50s.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with the economic times. This is kind of, I have kind of a mixed feeling about this. you know, our after World War II, that's when we became a superpower. And we can go through all the reasons why, you know, but basically we won. A lot of countries lost, and we got to divvy up the prizes. And we also were also not only trying to, as we went on, defeat the spread of communism, we also had the infrastructure because of our initiatives, even before World War II, or before our involvement in World War II, I should say, we were pretty industrialized, and we came out of it very industrialized.
Right,
our infrastructure was there. And you have to remember, our infrastructure wasn't damaged either, because none of the actual casualties and collateral damage, none of that was over on our shores.
Right.
And that's another thing that people truly take for granted in the United States. It's just simply our geographic location, you know?
We've just never, it wasn't until Pearl Harbor that anyone stepped foot,
right,
basically.
And that's not really, I mean, when you think about where Pearl Harbor is geographically,
it's not even close
to the continental United States.
That's how isolated we are.
Yes.
From Europe and
that has made it very easy for us to, you know, that in our abundance of natural resources, which we have many, I'm not going to say it made it easy because certainly the settlers didn't have it easy, but it certainly afforded the opportunity. You know, if you wanted to make something of yourself, you could do it.
Right.
The American dream was very real.
Right.
For, again, the white guy. I think that's a good place to stop, Brian. We can pick up next time and delve more into the minutiae of education and the opportunity that goes along with it. So I'm done.
All right. Well, I think I'm done too.
I'm Boomer.
And I'm X.
Over.
And out.